You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America Roundtable episode. My name's Turner Sparks.
I am Michael Kaplan.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. July 30th, I will be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, your city, Kaplan, the home of Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid. Hopefully
the
still
home
there.
Of Tobias James Harris.
James Harden on a max contract by then. That
who's a bigger, who's more important to your city? Rocky or Tobias Harris?
It's close.
They call it Tobias Harris's city. Maxi, isn't he one of your guys? McConnell.
Maxi's the man, yeah.
Mitch McConnell's kid with the Nazi.
TJ McConnell hasn't been on the team in years, but
no, he hasn't been there.
No, 5 years.
Charles anyway, Barkley, what? Moses Malone, Hersey Hawkins, the Philadelphia.
You should
76ers.
Open with that. Open with some Hersey Hawkins material.
I'll just start naming historic Sixers.
Clarence Weatherspoon.
Spoon, as I called him back in the day.
Baby Barkley, as we called him.
No one knows what we're talking about. This is Lost anyway. In America. I kind of thought we were doing a bunker episode with our
we forgot
tight-knit audience, but this is the wide audience. How's it going, everybody? Today, we have on everyone on the World's Smartest Podcast Network, Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy, PhD. Do you say the doctor and the PhD, or is it one or the other?
Or I think that's like the PhD is the doctor.
Like yeah, but it's, PhD. I think it's spoken, you say doctor, and then if written, right. You say Andrea Jones-Roy, comma, PhD.
I guess. I don't know. I
Professor Andrew Heaton. So Andrea Jones-Roy is from the Majoring in Everything podcast. Everybody knows that. We're still waiting on our invite.
I'm still waiting. Long wait.
Andrew Heaton is from the Political Orphanage podcast. We've been on that many times. Have you, Kaplan? You've been over there.
I've been on that podcast, and he just had a great episode I'm recommending. It's called Other Nations Are Insufficiently Horny, and it's a fascinating discussion about demographics. I highly recommend it.
Not enough people are having kids. Is that the point?
Not enough people are having kids in certain countries. Like, I'll say China and Japan are screwed, but America's in good shape. So it's an interesting conversation. We're in good shape because we're having babies and we got immigrants. So
it's shocking to me that we're having babies because we live in New York City. And no one has. You're the only people I know who have kids.
I have two kids. So I think that's patriotic of me is what I've learned. It's like I've done the minimum. I think two kids.
I've said this many times, but having kids is bad. It's the worst possible thing you can do for the environment is have children, which is why humans are the biggest polluters on Earth. I mean, look it up. Read a book, Kaplan. Figure it out, you know. So then if you have kids, you're the biggest polluter on Earth times two because you have two kids. So I've always said, because I have no children, I should not have to recycle.
Yeah, but what I learned is you need kids to then like make the economy work. So we need to have kids to solve the environmental problems because old people aren't going to do it.
I mean,
so
come on. That's assuming your brain. And I mean, your wife, Randy Kaplan, is a very smart person, but is it that your kids are going to be the ones solving the environmental crisis?
I mean, they're the children of the world's smartest one of the world's smartest podcasters in America. In the
That's
world,
a good
actually.
Point.
So, yes.
That's a good point. But I don't know we should get them on the air and just ask. Teddy might say yes, that he wants to. If you ask Ruby Kaplan, would you rather solve the world's environmental crisis or be a YouTube celebrity? What would her answer be?
I mean, that is a no-brainer. She would say, environmental crisis, you'd say boring.
YouTube. Before you even got the rest of the word out, would you like to save the environment? Boring.
yeah. So, but she is gifted. She's been invited to the New York City Gifted program. So that's the future, right there.
Whoa, she's in the Gifted and Talented program, Ruby Kaplan.
We might not say yes to it, but she has been invited to join. So yeah.
I remember from a previous episode, and you guys, if you want to hear this banter for 30 minutes a few times a week, a few episodes a week, patreon.com/lostinamerica. Live from the bunker is the name of the show. $5 We have thousands of people who listen to this Lost in America show. If you each give us $5 a month, that's it. The price of a cup of coffee in New York City is $5, Kaplan. I'm not. If you give us $5 a month, drink one less cup of coffee a month. Or how about this? You have money. Just give us $5 a month. You don't have to cut your budget anywhere else. Just give us $5. If all of you gave it us, we would have, I don't know, we'd be making 10 grand a month. I mean,
you, as I announced this on the Patreon show, but I should announce it here, because of the cheapskates in our audience who have not become Patreon members, because of their like unwillingness to pay money for a good product, I have been forced to get a second job. I am now a licensed real estate broker in the city of New York here because of them. But I would love to, retire from that already.
Not to be the voice of the audience here, but I think I speak for everyone when I say, what was your first job?
Oh, I was saying the podcast is the first job.
Oh, that's a job.
That's it. We're doing a program here, aren't we?
A couple hours a couple times a week. Yeah, sure. You spend 40 hours a week working on that. Now you're working 80 hours a week. You have two full-time jobs. Look at that.
Yeah,
like thanks a single to them, mother but... hours you're working over here. Just to put your kids through school. So they can be YouTube celebrities.
But if they need any real estate in New York City and you're a listener, come to me, Cap in America.
He's a real estate agent, everybody. Cap, we're getting way off the rails here.
Yes.
Let's just get back to the Lost in America business. So we have episodes coming up. People have been asking. Yes. People are like, are you going to check back in with Ukraine? Yes, we will. We have Ukraine check-in straight from Kiev coming soon. People are asking, what about this Colombian election? Will you be covering that? Yes, we will be covering that. There's a new president down in Colombia. It's a former guerrilla. And the vice president is a POC female, I believe. So congratulations to them. Yes, from the guerrilla. I think it's a far left-wing militia dictatorship guerrilla organization. But good for them. They got a female going.
But a progressive one.
We're happy.
Yeah. No cis white men there.
But I don't even know the details. So we're going to have to find that out. But today, it's the world's smartest podcast network. Smartest brains out there. We're covering, it's a lot of topics. I don't know what they are. Just listen. That is it, Kaplan. Should we get to the show?
Play the music.
There's no music. I should have said.
Play the show.
Play the swoosh sound.
Play the swoosh.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the world's smartest podcast network. I am Turner Sparks. I'm here with Sir Michael Ira Kaplan. We are the Lost in America podcast. Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy is here. How you doing, Andrea?
Hi, great to be here. Happy World's Smartest Day.
Majoring in Everything podcast.
Thank you.
And Professor Andrew Heaton from the Political Orphanage. Professor, how you doing out there in the wilderness?
Hello. Very good to be talking to you all. Hi, I'm doing great.
Now, the three of us are in New York City. Heaton is in the
Bigfoot
territory. It seems like a jungle in Colorado.
Yeah.
I am nearest to Del Norte, Colorado. That is the place that I am nearest to. So kind of the above the New Mexico border, in the southern mountains of Colorado in the Rio Grande National Forest.
I'm picturing you eating out of a tin of beans while holding it with gloves with no fingers right now.
No, I have very good nutrition while I camp. I bought an AC fridge that I can run off my solar panel, and I have a salad every morning for breakfast.
Breakfast.
I brought some Alfredo sauce that I have with sweet peas. Not because I'm a hobo, because I want to eat more vegetables. And then I have some corned beef hash and some other things too. So I eat very well.
Sweet peas like and Alfredo. Dish.
Moving on.
Peas with Alfredo sauce. I call it Heaton Alfredo.
That's a new dish.
Let's get to what we're here to talk about, folks. Yes, Heaton might die in the next 24 hours.
Bigfoot's going to eat
but
him.
But never mind that. That'll just make this a more interesting episode. We'll increase the subscriber, the downloads if we do that. All right. So we have a million topics to talk about. When I say a million, I mean four. We're going to go through four topics. I want to start here. I want to know. So I don't know if you guys have heard of this LIV golf tournament. I don't even know how to pronounce it. LIV. Live, live.
I figured that tournament was short for Louis Vuitton, but what do I know? Okay.
It probably was up until like earlier this year or late last year in 2021. So PGA is the major company that Professional Golf Association that essentially has a monopoly on golf in the United States of America. Companies have come up every once in a while, tried to challenge it. It never works. PGA is like the NBA for basketball, the NFL for football. It's gigantic. It's the whole thing. And then very recently, as of last year, a company called LIV has come out of nowhere. It's run by a guy. Greg Norman is kind of the head of it. He's this legendary golfer.
Australian.
Think of like, I don't know, Shaquille O'Neal, if you're thinking basketball or something like that. Okay.
People know Greg Norman. No?
He's the face of it. It didn't take very long for the world to realize that this is, I think, 100% funded by the Saudi government.
Nice.
MBS, the guy we all know and love. The guy who's killing journalists over there, the Washington Post, all that kind of stuff. $850 billion is the budget of this LIV company. They've now started poaching major golfers. If you want to even use the term poaching, you could also say just hiring, giving him a better offer. It's Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, who's I believe from Spain. And many of the top golfers are now playing in this LIV tournament. This is the PGA has now banned these people for, I think, for life, right?
You get that's the thing. You can't golf ever again in the PGA.
If you defect and go play for the Saudis. Now this has become a big issue of people are saying Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia, Greg Norman, these greats, they're now traitors to their country, even though Sergio Garcia is not from America, he's from Spain. Either way,
traitor to America.
They're traitors to America. Yes. They're bringing shame to themselves, their family. They've sold out all for the almighty dollar. The interesting part to me is one of these. So they're now going to have five tournaments in the USA. This LIV thing is going to be worldwide. It's a worldwide golf tournament. One of them is in the United States. One of those in the United States will happen at one of Trump's courses.
Of course.
In New Jersey. Yeah. Now, I don't know how. To be transparent, I don't know how much he even has sway over the courses. A lot of them he just franchised out his name. Yeah. So I don't know if this has to do with him or not, but it brings up the point that our government certainly does deal with Saudi Arabia and MBS. And my question to all of you is, should we be holding our athletes to higher standards than we hold our government?
Sure. Yeah. I think in general we should. Can I ask a couple of follow-up questions on this? You can't be in the PGA if you do LIV. Is that because they are funded by Saudi Arabia, or is it because the PGA is punishing you for working with a competitor?
It's the latter, I think.
Right? Well, it's clearly the latter. Yeah, it's clearly that they want their monopoly to continue to exist, right. But they're using the Saudi thing as the story. You know, it's a convenient moral high ground they're taking.
Right. It'd be harder if it was England or something.
Iraq for democracy reasons.
Yes.
Yeah.
To give a good example, Hooters, actually, there was a Hooters tour like 10 years ago and they never really seemed to have a problem with Hooters. So
I don't know. That's just wholesome all American fun.
A tour of Saudi Arabia? Really...
No. Let me explain. There was a Hooters golf tour.
Because that sounds great. If Hooters could do a tour of Saudi Arabia, that would be fantastic.
That's complicated.
Yeah, that'd be a little.
There was a Hooters golf tournament, but it was also kind of roundly seen as like the minor leagues. Everyone kind of accepted it was if you didn't get in the PGA, you played on the Hooters tour. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at with this. But people are, so they just had a major PGA tournament, or not PGA, they had a major, the US Open, I think just played, which anyone's allowed to play in because it's not a PGA sanctioned event. So Phil Mickelson, he did play in that. It was in Boston this past weekend. A small percentage of people were booing him and heckling him and calling him a traitor. Most people didn't seem to care.
Andrew, did he respond in Arabic?
Absolutely no. His response is just kind of like that he doesn't care. He's kind of just become this villain, like been like, you know what, screw you, I can do whatever I want, it's my life, it's my money.
Yeah,
but I don't know, is anybody here a golf fan at all? Because isn't Phil Mickelson kind of washed up? Like, he's past his prime, right? He's old. I don't follow golf. It's the one sport I don't follow.
I am, yeah, I follow golf, not a lot, but I guess more than you. He can still win.
I thought maybe it was just like he's going to get paid a ton of money now
to go play in China or whatever.
So why not? Of course he'll do it. He's not like going to win anything.
Well, I would compare it to kind of like how Beckham was. So Beckham came to America. Beckham. He could still play for sure.
Right.
In the other league. He kind of just decided. So golf, you can be pretty old and still be good.
So it's like if Tom Brady was going to go play for like a Saudi league.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
I would give him money to do that. That sounds awesome. I need to see that happen.
I mean, so my personal opinion is yes, these guys are scumbags for doing this. But also, you know, the NBA took a different route when they got into dealing with maybe more nefarious countries, and they just partnered with China on this whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. So they went to China in the 80s and said, hey, let's be business partners. And that CCTV is like the BBC of China. They have a contract every year with the NBA, how many games they're going to show, all that kind of stuff. So which CCTV is run by the Chinese government. So they're literally partners with the Chinese government. That's more of that's not as clear cut as a case, I guess, because the Chinese government in 1985 versus now are two totally different things.
And also FIFA, the soccer organization, partners with Qatar, with,
Russia, the same company that owns this LIV golf tournament, this Saudi backed company called, I forget what the initials are, but they also just bought 80% of, I wrote it down. It might be Chelsea or one of the major, of the major soccer. Newcastle United.
One more question. So the money for Liv comes from MBS and his whole thing. Who pays for PGA? Where does that money come from? Is that just like we pay to go see stuff? Like I don't know.
Who's funding the private organization, like the NBA is.
I don't know, because it's not like they have salaries. It's all prize money. It's different than basketball.
Yeah. I think the PGA is a private organization. I mean, it's definitely not taxpayer funded.
And it is the monopoly thing is the point, because I don't know if the tennis had this exact same happen in the 70s when there was going to be this like team tennis organization come up, because they thought, oh, people may actually like tennis if they play in teams instead of one-on-one. And the USTA, the tennis organization, the PGA, their version of the PGA did the exact same thing. They said, if you play in this league, you're banned. So like Jimmy Connors and some others were banned for like 2 years. And so they're pretending to try to get like Greg Norman and gotchas. Like you see Greg Norman, they asked him and he said, well, about the journalist that was killed.
Oh, anytime one of these people does an interview, they do like a press conference. It's brutal to watch, because every single question is like, do you think that Khashoggi should have been killed?
Did you hear what Greg Norman said? Did everyone hear what Greg Norman said to that, by the way?
What did he say?
He goes, we've all made mistakes.
Yeah,
so he goes, I'm out here to defend the Saudi government. We've all made mistakes. Which
nice.
The other part of this is
forgiveness is where growth comes from.
They're all dumb athletes,
right?
So they don't have good answers.
Answers to like how did the game go for you, typically, right?
Yes.
Like I've seen enough of those.
I have
a view on this, but Heaton, I think you've been trying to speak, and you're the wind is blowing, so your internet's out.
Yes, exactly. First, I was going to say, I love the idea of the first question being, do you think Khashoggi should have been killed? As if the relevant question is, did he deserve to die? And there are multiple people on both sides of that equation. I think that's a great question to go with. Here, okay, this is what I'm thinking is I'm completely shooting from the hip on this, because I don't really know a lot about sports ethics. But it would seem to me that if you're going to try to not participate with any country that's doing something really heinous, there's not going to be a lot of countries with money that you can work with in the future. That's just I think that individual players we should work with. So like if Russia wants to send over its team to us, I don't have a problem with Russia's team. I have a problem with their military. I have a problem with their government, but I don't have a problem with their individual team. When it comes to like organizations themselves, what I'm inclined to say is the direct thing we're dealing with evil, or is it just it's the company that's or the country that's evil? And what I mean by that is, Kaplan, you brought up FIFA that happened a couple of years ago, where they literally built a stadium in Qatar, or maybe it was the Emirates, I can't remember, but it was like slave labor.
Oh yeah, the World Cup coming up next year. Yeah,
right. Yeah, so we shouldn't participate in that. We shouldn't be participating in a place where the actual stadium has been built by slave labor. But if it's a thing where the money that's funding the advertising campaign is coming from the oil reserves of a country that's doing questionable things, that I feel like is a little bit more indirect. And my preference would be that we just sort of apply whatever we come up with equally to whatever participating countries there are.
All right. That seems reasonable. That's my take. My take is I'm fine with it. I am going to be the most right wing I've ever been in my entire life, which is free market, baby. Get out there and earn that money while you're playing golf. And if MBS wants to throw all that Saudi money towards golf, honestly, that's a better use of his money than a million other things that he could be doing and probably is doing. So at least we're siphoning some off towards something where we're not going to kill each other. And maybe integrating them more into the broader world of sports will do something vaguely helpful. I doubt it because I'm thinking about Russia right now, but it could do something. And I think, you know, governments doing sanctions and all of that, there is some evidence empirically to suggest that it works, and I leave it to the governments. I think private people should be able to do whatever they want.
And also, let's say the PGA is a classic golf run by white men tour.
Yeah.
It's nice to see a country of color get involved.
Oh, there you go. Kaplan. Whoa, Kaplan.
Kaplan's on the left. That's, I'm on the right.
That's why the PGA is so angry about it. They're threatened.
If you're
they're
not white in favor of Khashoggi getting killed, you are a racist. That's how that works.
Khashoggi's everybody knows that woke, pro-women Saudi government.
Yeah.
There's no lady. They're not challenging the ladies tour, huh?
That was amazing.
I'll just clarify my point, and then we'll move on. I think it's detestable that these guys are doing this, but I don't want to stop their right for them to do it. You know, I think, sure, go ahead and go do it. Make your money if you want to. Personally, I think it really is a direct line to the Saudi government. This is a government, 100% government owned company. I think the term they're using is sports washing. They're trying to basically make the world forget that they kill journalists by being like, well, but they're really, it's so nice they're providing us with a golf league.
Forget the indoor skiing.
What's ironic about
but
this?
But they are an ally of ours, technically.
No one was really talking about Khashoggi anymore. It kind of died off. But then the second this golf tournament came about, now it's back in the news and they're asking all these golfers. So
wait, hold on. One quick thing. If what they're trying to do is sports wash, this is what they should do with that $100 million is just start, instead of killing journalists, bear with me here. Instead of killing journalists, kill people that own those telemarketing firms in the United States. And when they get to the point where they're killing 10 of those folks for every one journalist, I'll be like, all right, well, I guess I'm okay with you guys.
Is the Unabomber. What's
who are
happening?
The telemarketing
telemarketers? You want to kill them all?
No,
are you in 1995? Did you time travel?
The people that, you know, you get these irritating phone calls. Like there was like a 10-year period where you wouldn't get these phone calls. And now it's all come back. You have to download apps to block them and stuff. Don't kill the people making the phone calls.
I don't think you should be downloading apps. Heaton.
Yeah. No, I get those calls too, and I get annoyed. But
Heaton,
I never
the
wish
woods
death
have
on
gotten
people.
To you.
Yeah, I mean, you just press block on your phone, and it's mostly robots.
But I should just to clarify,
in that case,
Heaton,
I don't want the Saudi government to kill anybody.
It's not 100 million; it's 850 billion. So yeah, they could take out a lot of telemarketers.
A lot of telemarketers.
So they
could money.
Solve the problem, is what you're saying.
I guess now I'm just upset they're not doing more civilian space travel because I would like to go to space. I care more about that than golf. Just as if they're going to.
Oh, yeah.
Money, right?
That's a great point. Yeah,
right.
They should do that.
Heaton, you're next. What do you got, man?
Okay. So, as you know, I am camping and I have been driving.
Oh, you didn't
here,
mention it. No.
And it is the most expensive camping trip of my entire life because the gas to get here is so exorbitantly expensive. Now, there's lots of reasons for that, most of which are not directly under the control of the American government. A big portion of it is that Russia has gone to war with Ukraine, and that has kinked up the oil pipeline globally, oil being a fungible resource. So that's a big thing. However, I note that there have been people saying that the reason that oil is so expensive right now is because of corporate greed, that the reason that I am paying more at the gas pump on my camping trip is because of these greedy oil companies. The people that are saying this, by the way, include Bernie Sanders and the president of the United States, that the reason that oil prices are so high is because of corporate greed. And where I'll give Biden some cover is I don't think the president really has a lot of direct immediate control on this. He did release, I think it's going to be a million barrels a day from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but it takes about 20 days to even get that up and running. So that seems to be about the most you could do, but it's still a drop in the barrel compared to what Russia is not doing with 300 million barrels a day. But the take in general, whenever you hear that the prices have gone up because of greed, all of my economic instincts go into high alert. And the concern or the problem I have with that is a couple. One, greed is operating at 100% capacity at all times in the oil industry and in every other industry. They're making as much money as they can at any given time. It's not like a bunch of them decided that they don't like their families anymore and they're going to have more money now. And then when prices go back down again, it's because the oil companies are spending time with their families. That's not what's going on. Whenever oil prices go down, no one ever says that the oil companies are less greedy. The reason that they're going up is that the price of crude oil is going up because there is less crude oil. And when you have less supply and higher demand, prices go up. That's just how that works. So they're making more money as a result of that. But it's not like all the oil people got together and went, we should just really increase the amount of money we take at the pumps. And I looked into this too, like Apple's making a lot more money than Exxon is right now. Exxon made $5.5 billion in the last quarter. Apple made $25 billion in the last quarter. But I don't know that anybody thinks Apple's being particularly greedy at the moment. So I'm not saying there couldn't be things that are done. But I am saying that whenever you start talking about greed as being the principal cost element in the price of something, it tells me that you're either trying to scapegoat or you don't know how economics works. And I don't like either of those things coming from the president.
I spent my childhood being told that the president is the most powerful man in the world. And then I feel like I spent my adulthood being told that the president can't control anything. It's there. That's all you ever hear now. Well, it's not up to him. It's up to the states. It's the states' rights. Oh, with COVID, even Trump was in office. Well, they can't. He says he doesn't want us to wear a mask, but this is the state of New York. We do what we want. We're testing. We're wearing masks. And then it's flipped for him. Well, how much power does the president have? I don't understand. Why do we elect someone if every time it comes to, they go, I don't know, I can't do anything. You got to ask the governors.
Technically,
Exxon.
Technically, executive power in the United States, depending on how you measure it, has been expanding since we've been alive.
The opposite, actually.
Yeah. And so the president, ironically, Turner, I agree with you that I heard the same kind of narrative and it's flipped, but technically they actually are more powerful than they used to be. I think that we're just more divided. And so like to blame or not blame, like I'm happy to blame Trump for literally everything that happened during those 4 years. And I know that that's wrong. Yeah. And then when it happens to Biden, I'm totally partisan. And I think, well, he can't control anything.
Right.
So it's like whatever party's not in power gets to blame the other party. That's all that's happening.
Hmm. Yeah. So, and I was going to say on heat and what you're saying about the way economics works, like the left and the Democratic Party they want to get rid of fossil fuels, right? That's the goal, the long-term goal, no fossil fuels.
Yeah. To kill America's economy.
Right. So Biden came out and he went off. Biden came out and he went off on the oil companies and he wants them to make more oil. And the only way to make more oil is to build more refineries. But why would they build, like he's asking them to spend billions of dollars of their money. It's not to build an industry that he wants to get rid of in 10 years. You know, like
exactly.
There's so going to be no oil. So why would I build more plants to make more oil?
100%. Let's say that it takes, and I don't know the exact numbers on this. Let's say it takes 10 to 15 years to recoup your money on an oil refinery. First, we haven't built a major oil refinery since 1976. That's the last time we constructed one.
Yeah.
We are unlikely to do that in the future, in part because if we build it near a population center, people go, you shouldn't build this oil refinery near a population center because it produces pollution. It's going to hurt people. Fair enough. But if we build it in the woods, we're like, well, that's going to hurt wildlife.
Yeah.
So, and there's a point to all of this. Like, yes, hydrocarbons they do pollute. They do increase carbon in the atmosphere. They do have all of these negative externalities. That's all true. So as a result, Cap, to your point, the administration has said, we want to get to carbon emission zero vehicles by 2035. That is the goal. We want to get to the point where by 2035, all of the vehicles on the road are not producing carbon. That is to say that they are not using petroleum. If I am an oil company executive, why on earth would I put in investment for something that's going to take 20 years to pay off, knowing that I can't get any money 20 years from now on it? There is a logical problem here. Now you can say good. I hate oil. It should all cost $50 a gallon. I don't drive a car.
fair enough. I say that's not a very good electoral strategy. But if you're going to make that case, then it doesn't make any sense at all for the president to try to tell corporations that they're being greedy and they should produce more oil at a loss.
I have two things to say about this. So the first is, yeah, it definitely doesn't make any sense, but it makes perfect political sense for Biden to be like, oh, well, the problem, given that we can't control anything that's happening in the world, I can at least make it look like the companies are keeping us from having oil as opposed to blaming myself. He's just deflecting
right.
it.
To
right?
my degree, yeah.
My second right. point is something, I'm so glad you mentioned this topic because I do not have a car. I live in New York and barely remember how to drive, but I drove to Maryland last week. And until I drove to Maryland, I did not care about the price of gas. I would see the news, I'd see the headlines and be like, oh, we're spoiled Americans. Everyone needs to calm down. The oil is subsidized, blah, blah, blah. We're like, it's cheap. It's more expensive everywhere else in the world. Then I drove for 4 hours and now I'm, I hate
Republican.
Biden. Yeah. Literally, as I was filling up the pump, I just put a Trump 2024 sticker on the rental car.
And there are a lot of cultural wedge issues to this. Like you just mentioned subsidies, Andrea. We shouldn't be subsidizing oil. I'm very much for ending these subsidies of oil. And I think you can make a very good argument that oil is sort of, even if the government's not directly intervening, because we do not immediately factor in the negative externalities in terms of health and environmental effect, that we're not actually paying how much it costs in a way we would for other things. So you can make a good case that it is below what actually should be paid. That's all fair. And for the record, like, I'm in favor of a carbon tax, which would increase the cost of petroleum. That being said, though, I do hear that cultural element a lot right now, and I don't like it. Like Colbert the other day had a monologue saying, like, you know, we've had a boycott of Russian oil, and it's worth it to pay $2 extra at the gas pump to know that the oil money that you're buying is not ill-gotten. And then he says, literally, I drive a Tesla. I don't care if it's $15. Yeah. And I'm like, man, you are out of touch with everyone in America.
Just for the record, that was like 9 months ago.
It was early in the Russia war.
Was it? Okay.
Gas has actually gotten more expensive since then, but yeah.
February or March or something.
That makes sense talking about like that way to somebody like me. I don't have to be out here camping, right? This is completely voluntary. I'm here. Right. I'm here recreationally, right? But where I do feel a pinch is if you are driving for a living in middle America, that is directly affecting you. And it's not something frivolous. It's just like, do you get to eat or not? And that is a thing. And then the final thing that I'll add is, I would, for anybody that lives in a major metropolitan, cosmopolitan area, like Andrea or somebody else, I would remind you that even though you are not paying for gas directly, you are absolutely getting stuff from petroleum. Like, do your shoes, are there any rubber in them? Well, those are hydrocarbons. Like,
God,
no,
I make my
oil.
Shoes out of renewable palm.
Yeah, do you have an iPhone? Like, do you use anything plastic?
No.
Plastic comes from petroleum, right?
So no, it's metal only.
Right. So in your electric car.
I repurposed some Coke cans. It's a phone.
We could definitely do things cleaner. I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
For anybody, I don't want to pick on Andrew. For anybody living in Baltimore, let's say.
Is your hair curler gas powered?
Yeah.
You're still using stuff.
Yeah. Turner, go.
I have one solution here. Everyone says there is no easy solution. Everyone's like, it's a lot of factors. We got to figure it out. Ooh, no easy. There is an easy solution. Kill Putin.
Mm.
Done.
That's not easy.
The revolution's over. They leave Ukraine. Everything goes back to normal. We lift this whole like Russia, you know, this idea that we don't buy oil from Russia anymore. We start buying from him again because he's dead.
All right.
Navalny takes power, and then I don't know what happens.
So
it's corporate
greed because they're not willing to send their henchmen out to eastern Ukraine to kill Russia.
I never said corporate greed.
I'm saying Biden is saying corporate greed because that's what he's referring to.
We took over Iraq. Why can't we kill Putin? I don't understand. Yeah. We did one thing for oil. Why can't we do? This whole idea when people were like, we only went to Iraq for oil.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I was like, good. We need oil. I don't understand what's bad about this.
Turner, you know? Road trip sparks over here.
Why can't we now go kill Putin for oil? I want to put oil, put four oil on the bombs. Right on there.
On the nukes, just send it into.
I'm happy. This is what happens when you don't go kill people for oil. I hope everyone's proud of themselves.
That's the drop. But he, and also to add to what you were saying about being out of touch, I don't know if you saw early in this whole problem, the White House spokesman said people, if they didn't like the gas prices, should buy electric vehicles, which average one's like 55,000. I saw Tesla just raise their prices 25%. Like,
but don't buy them from Elon Musk because he's the enemy.
He's at evil again. And like, the prices of that's all going up because of the Russia war as well, because lithium batteries. But and then one other thing I was going to say is just to get back to our other story. You saw what Biden was doing this week is that now he's kissing the finger of Saudi Arabia. So he's going to beg them. After he was calling them monsters and stuff the whole campaign, he's now begging Saudi Arabia to give us more oil so the prices go down. For all we know, he's going to be at the opening round of the golf course on the Trump's he's going to be the
him
one like
Phil Mickelson will be out there.
He's going to be hitting the putt. Yeah, he'll be the caddy for Phil, whatever, just to get the price of gas down before the election. So
I spent 2 weeks, not to brag, I spent 2 weeks at an oil conference in Azerbaijan about 10 years ago.
On a private island.
Yeah.
That's the enemy of our podcast.
Right. Wait, how?
I was studying oil in grad school and I tricked someone into paying me to go to this thing. And my only thing, I learned two things that I think the United States could use and Biden personally could use. One, Azerbaijan is desperate to be the next Saudi Arabia. And so I think it would take nothing to go over there and just like high five and we would have all the oil we want from them. And I went swimming twice in whatever that big lake is. I already forgot the name where all the oil is. The whole thing smells like oil. I came out slicked like one of those seagulls after the Exxon spill. And so we could just take that water and filter it. No one's touching that shit stuff.
I like you just getting dumped on by the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah. That was just me.
Let's move on. So, Kaplan, you're, what are you?
Should I go? Yeah. So, so on that note, you know, I'm a Jew, as we've discussed before.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, so
And Heaton's in the woods.
He's in the woods.
And we're at war with Russia.
Well, we're getting to that in a second. So us Jews, we always know everybody who's successful who's a Jew. We know them all. The most obscure ones, the better. So for years, I was always happy because I'm randomly was a Chelsea soccer fan, the soccer team in England. And I said, oh, they got a Jewish owner, some Russian guy. Didn't know anything about him. Just this guy, Roman Abramovich or something like that. So then the war starts, the Russia-Ukraine war. And all of a sudden, I read this article that says that Yad Vashem, the Holocaust, the most famous Holocaust museum in Jerusalem, was asking them, the Russians, or asking the West not to put sanctions on Roman Abramovich, this Chelsea owner. And I said, that's strange. Why are they asking that? Then I dug into it and I saw that he is the number one donor to he's given them like over $1 billion over the course of many years. And then there started to be a whole uproar about this and other charities he's done. And all these charities suspended ties with him. And, you know, they said, like, we're not going to take your money. People are returning your money. So I started thinking, what's the right thing to do in this situation is what I'm trying to get at. Because, you know, this happened with Jeffrey Epstein. This happened with Harvey Weinstein. This happened with Dr. Bill Cosby, where they give all this money over the years. You know, they give millions of dollars to colleges. You know, Bill Cosby famously had a women's college named a dormitory or something named after him. Something like Spelman College, I believe. So, and then what happens is they always give the money back and they scrub their names. And I think they shouldn't give the money back. I think like the money, if the money, it's gone to a good use. It doesn't make the person a good person. It doesn't, you know, get rid of their sins. But giving it back just gives the person more money. And on the flip side of that is, I wonder who the arbiter is, or what the, like, where the line is and what charity should do to not, to accept money from other, from bad people, I guess. Cause I looked up a list and I saw a list of the 10 most toxic philanthropists, you know, and it's got Epstein, it's got Cosby, but then it's got like David Koch, one of the Koch brothers. Mm. And so then it becomes a sort of a thing where you're like, well, now it's political, you know, who's deciding these things? Like, why?
Yeah.
If you go to the opera and you see the, you know, one of the Koch brothers' names, is it really going to cause you harm? Or is it nice that he helped build Lincoln Center, whatever building that is? So I don't know. I come to the brains for answers. Where do you guys stand on this?
Well, I'm going to have to leave in a second. So
let's
with you. I'll go first here. I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, behind charities are 95% funded by criminals.
Guilt, people who feel bad, right?
If, guilty. That's the whole point of being, of donating to a charity. It's because you've made billions and you've probably made it illegally. And a way to wash yourself of your sins is to donate part of it. The Sackler family, who created the opioid crisis. Another,
they're on my list, by the way.
Half the buildings in America are named after them. I mean, as you said, you got Epstein. You didn't even mention the pedophile Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You didn't mention the Clinton Foundation, the murder Clinton's, of Bill Clinton. Yeah. You know, Vince Foster. I mean, like,
I mean, the guy and the Godfather, so, you know, that he's donating all the money to the Pope.
Point,
you know,
is behind, I mean, it's a saying, behind every great charity is a great crime. They say that, don't they?
Do they?
So, if you're not going to take money, if charities are not going to take money from criminals, then there's no money left. It's going to be a lot of $5 GoFundMes that you're going to need to build your wing of the new, you know, Chancellor's Hall at your university. Or you just wait for somebody to make nefarious money and then you let them give $100 million to you out of shame.
Well, I'm just thinking about this. And like, there's a concept in political science of revealed preferences, which we can state what we think is right or wrong, but what we actually do is going to signal what we actually value. And I think if someone came to us, one of those toxic billionaires came to us and said, we will fund the world's smartest podcast network. You'll never have to do anything other than do this for 10 years. Would you take our money? I would take it from anybody.
Yeah, it'd be called the world's famous.
I would say we've all made
the MBS podcast network.
We've all made mistakes podcast network.
Yeah. And we all, good people
we've
on both
all,
sides.
We've all killed the.
Can I disrupt?
Washington Post journalist at certain times.
Can I disrupt the order? Because I think this is relevant. And Turner, I want to hear your take on my thing before we go. Is that okay? All right.
Oh,
and then
we'll
round it out. All right. So we'll mine is not from the news. It's from Wikipedia/political science from 50 years ago, and it's a model of power called the exit voice and loyalty model. And the reason it's relevant thematically today is that it's all about, you know, citizens dealing with a leader that they don't like, or consumers dealing with a company they don't like, or all of us athletes dealing with a PGA we don't like. It's that power dynamic, right? All right, so it ties into everything. The question is, and my question for you all as I go through this is math useful to help us understand the world? And the math is just as follows. If I'm the person who's in a country and I hate the leader, I have three choices. I can exit, move to Canada. I can use my voice, protest, and whatever else Americans do. Or I can be loyal and shut up and say, I'm going to wait till the next leader. Or I'm going to just let Putin do his thing and that's it, right? If I use voice, the leader can then choose to give me what I'm asking for. Or I'm going to stop invading Ukraine, or they can say, I don't care about you, and they'll keep invading Ukraine. At that point, you, the person, can choose to then leave or stay. And there's a whole bunch of math around all of this that helps you figure out under what circumstances which party would do what. So, for example, if I have some kind of bargaining power, if the country really cares that I remain a citizen, if the PGA really cares that I keep playing in their tournament, then it's much more likely that my use of voice is going to matter, right? And if I have a credible exit, so the PGA example again, if I'm upset with the PGA and this live thing exists, I now have more bargaining power against the PGA because I say, if you don't give me what I want, I'm going to go over to this other thing. So it's all about figuring out when the two parties, the high up and kind of the masses, when they have power and how they navigated it. I think it's super interesting. When you do the math, it's very dry, but I want to know from, based on our conversation today, based on what you all think, is that, do you want to know more, or are you like, I hate this, let's never talk about math again?
I would love to know more, but I had a hard time following because there's a lot coming at me. So can you clarify, are you saying that insofar as we can measure effect, that the most effective thing is to stay in the mix and remain vocal, that you are less impactful fleeing the country or knuckling under? You're more impactful remaining there and speaking up?
Okay. No, but Turner, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I think, sorry, Heaton, I got to go in 1 minute. So yeah. I think it's interesting. I think it relate like, so that another factor that we haven't thought of is another option. So if you speak out, in an option is for the government to do nothing or to listen to you, or a third option is for them to imprison you or kill you. So, right. Which is very real in most countries in the world.
Right.
So I think after living in China for 12 years, you can see that a big deterrent from speaking out against your government is punishment directly to you, one-on-one from your government. So it's not like we're going to do this to the masses. It's like, we're going to do this to you.
Right.
You are now in trouble because you said something. So are we assuming that this is in a country that doesn't exist?
I'm so glad you said that. So we're actually assuming it's an individual versus a government, and or an individual versus an employer or whatever. And and the individual meaning that we are indistinguishable for the most part from all the other citizens, but it's each citizen's choice. And you're exactly right that we can add a cost C for using voice. So every time I use voice, I lose some cost C, which is either I'm imprisoned, which is if you're in China and you use voice, you're in prison, or in the United States, you get trolled on Twitter. And so C is really small. So we can vary the size of the cost, and it can vary by person as well.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I think it could be used in business very well. There's like a perfect case that's going on right now with Spotify and paying comedians to bring us back to comedy.
Yeah.
And
most importantly,
Spotify basically doesn't pay comedians anything. You can listen to their jokes all you want. They pay nothing. And there's a guy who makes hundreds of millions of dollars from his contract with Spotify named Joe Rogan.
Oh,
who
has heard
a
of
lot,
him.
Shout has out. A lot of power at Spotify. And he's Mr. Like, I love comedy. I love comedians. I'll do anything to help comedians, except this. He's silent on this. Yep. He hasn't said a single word about this. And it hasn't, no one's written this article yet. And I don't know why. There's any journalists listening out there. This is a good article. They attack Rogan for like, oh, he said the N-word a decade ago. He did this. We didn't like, it's all political reasons, but not, this is just like a very clear backbone thing. Where he could say, hey, pay comedians or I'll leave Spotify. It would happen overnight. They would pay comedians. So,
I'll just add that I think any journalists who might have been listening in the first half of this episode are long since gone, ever since Heaton was like, I'm fine with killing journalists. So they may not be listening.
No, but telemarketers.
Yeah.
Oh, he said telemarketers. He didn't say
we have a lot of telemarketer listeners.
I got to go.
You got to go.
The rest of the
later,
show.
Turner.
Bye, Turner. So Heaton, so to answer your question, the idea is not to like, tell you what to do. It's to map out the dynamics. And then you say, hey, I've got this particular situation. Here's what I think the cost of using voice is going to be. Here's what my exit option looks like. Here's how likely I think the leader is to listen to me. And then the leader will do the same sort of decision when they decide whether or not to listen to the person who's like using voice or leaving or whatever. And it's to be able to take those variables and then vary what their value is and be able to optimize for your particular situation, what you should do. If I'm deciding, if I'm Joe Rogan, I could map it out and do it for myself. I'm currently irritated with NYU for something. And I literally sit here and I'm like, well, I can quit my job. I can just shut up and deal with it. Or I can say, I want a meeting and I want to talk about this. And I'm trying to figure out what to do. And that model is helpful to me to figure it out.
And analytics, basically.
Exactly.
For Heaton.
Heaton's dead. I think he got shot. I think this is it.
Sorry. I'm muted for a second. That sounds very useful, actually. This seems a very helpful thought construct.
Okay. All right, then. Cap, what do you got?
No, I don't know. My head's a little hurting from trying to follow.
Got it.
No, I think that's a great... That could be useful for... Like, what do you call that field, though?
Hold on. Like, I like the idea of there being some really... intense ethical situation. I'm like, hold on, www.wikipedia.com/math analysis. Okay, wait, I got my slide wrong here. I got it. Screw you, guy.
I mean, do we trust the math? They're actually running numbers, or they're just basically the mathematicians just doing what they think you should do and then giving you a fake number to.
Well, it sounds it's like they're producing an algorithm. They're not producing a suggestion. They're saying this is how you would determine the utility of your actions.
Right.
Well, it's more that you have it's like analytical. So it's like top down. So you have like a set of a framework and then you solve for various variables. And normally you don't even, you could apply a number, but normally you'd be like, if my benefit for leaving costs more than the cost of using voice times the probability that they're going to do something. And so you kind of work it out as a series of equations. The reason I bring this up is not to be an evangelist of this, is to say that I learned this stuff in grad school and it took me for 3 years. I was like, this is pointless. Humans don't use math. We don't think in terms of math. I've never optimized for anything by drawing out lines like Heaton was just describing. And then it kind of sunk into my brain long enough that I was like, I don't know how anyone makes sense of the world without this. And I cannot see the world any other way. And now I want to know if I've just been brainwashed or if anyone else thinks there's something to this.
I think there is something to that. So like, Andrea, to do a little bit of promo for my show, and actually you were part of it this week because we did a bonus episode with you and Charlie.
Yes.
I wanted to do an episode on gun control. I will preface, like, I am probably center left on gun control. I do not consider myself an ideologue either way on this particular issue. I'm not really fired up on this particular issue compared to my super gun control or super Second Amendment friends. But I did want to do an episode on gun control because it seemed very relevant in wake of the recent mass shootings. And I approached it from a numbers first perspective. And it was really interesting for me to do that because I found again and again that there were a lot of measures that I am fine with. I would vote for. They don't bother me. But when I actually looked into them, I'm like, oh, they wouldn't do anything, or they would do something very marginal. And so for me, trying to put a program together of how do I reduce the largest amount of gun deaths in the country? What would be the most efficacious things rather than marginal things, but the most efficacious things? I came up with very different things than I would have done if I had just used inductive or deductive reasoning with this sounds like a common sense plan as opposed to just looking at the numbers.
Well, all right. Yeah.
No, it's great to have real numbers though, because I live my life when I'm thinking about like how something's going to work out or a decision like you just mentioned. And in my head, I would always be like, well, there's probably a 20% chance that happens, 26% chance, but I'm just making up my numbers are based on feeling. Like it feels like a 10% chance that this could work or this. So it would be a great feature if you had like easy access to like someone who could really do real math for you. So yeah.
Well, Cap, that's what I was thinking about too, is that when I quit my job at NYU the first time, I literally was like, I can map this out and I can solve this. And I just didn't know. I was like, what's the probability that I get a different job if I leave NYU? What's the probability I would have gotten more
money? Give yourself
had
a number.
I stayed?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was making them up. Yeah. And by the end, I was just like, question mark. So it sort of fell apart unless you're hyper specific. Whereas I think Heaton, your example of guns is concrete enough. And there's evidence of at least, you know, we could compare
different
states.
It's at least evidence based. I have to say the numbers are stupid complex. And then there's also a lot of things that are really difficult to ascertain. Like it was, but yes, there's at least there's some rational basis in metrics that you're able to look at.
Right. Well, and in the case of this, it would be like the reason that I like the exit voice and loyalty model that I've been describing is it's an example of a strategic game, which is there's no one best move. It's the case where my best move as an individual depends on what I think my opponent, in this case, the government, is going to do. And so you could imagine one of the enlightening things for me, Heaton, in our conversation with Charlie is I had no idea that the Second Amendment people were so concerned that they needed to protect us against the government. That never crossed my mind, even though I guess once I read the Second Amendment, I was like, oh, I guess that is what.
Oh, yes. They're very much like they're like literally I went on a date last week. Uh-oh. And the I know. No, the date
he hired some mathematicians to run the numbers.
Yeah.
Chances of first base.
No, but like the young lady who is in favor of gun control, her father who lives in Texas, her father who lives in Texas has buried guns in the backyard in case the government comes looking for them. Like he literally has trunks that he's buried in his yard for when the government comes to seize his weapons, you know, come the tyranny and all that. It's very much an ever-present feature of Second Amendment.
So that's a good example. You could like map that out. You could say, I am a person living in Texas and I have guns. What am I going to do with my guns? Am I going to store them on the wall? Am I going to bury them or am I going to burn them? Right? Different things would have to be. Well, I'm going to say, what do I think the government's going to do? Well, Biden's in power. It's these woke lefts. They're going to come for my guns. So I'm going to bury them in the backyard. So my best move is to bury them because of what I think this other person is doing. And then Biden's going to say, no, 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 I'm not going to come for your guns, because they know that they're just going to bury them. And so the way the laws would even work would depend on whether you're likely to face someone who's a Second Amendment person or not. And I just feel like it's like soothing to be able to map that out differently instead of just argue.
I have one question I just thought of with all this is that how do you account for the unknown? Like we're talking about governments and rational governments. And obviously Biden's very predictable, but like an extreme example is if you were like a Jew in 1930 Germany and Hitler's in power and he's terrible, but if you were running numbers, you still wouldn't have, you can't even, there's no way to imagine what was going to happen. Like that wouldn't have been even.
Yeah.
So there, is that the bit of a hole in the math or no?
No, it's a great example. And that's a big limitation is that you're like, well, you know, in the case of Hitler, it's like exit voice or loyalty. Well, what's the cost of staying? Well, if you don't have any idea of how horrible things are about to get, your math is going to be completely wrong.
Right. Yeah.
And so I think a game theorist, a person who would do this sort of analysis would say, well, you add probabilities. So the probability that this is really horrible is 0.8 or something like that, or 0.8 times minus infinity, because that's how bad it would be or something. But I think you're absolutely right that we just didn't know, or everyone would have done everything they could have.
There's so many examples where people just don't know. Like, I mean, COVID, obviously, like things happen. Yeah. And we just have no.
Yeah. That's the thing with a lot of this stuff. Like there's an attempt to try to understand world problems as something cyclical or predictable. And unfortunately they're not. It's not like, like, with a business cycle that there's going to be a recession and then there'll be a recovery and we don't know how often it's going to happen, but there are going to be these peaks and troughs, right? And it's going to be generally inclined. But then there's going to be just random events they're black swan events we don't know about. And part of what you have to do is sort of apply Bayesian reasoning to the policies you're putting in place, either individually or at a government level. So like to put it in another, climate change going on, part of the rationale that I'm seeing is the really bad stuff is low probability, but very high impact of, low probability that suddenly because the temperature raises high enough that the tectonic plates themselves shift and that causes massive earthquakes. It's low probability that that's going to happen. But man, if it happens, we're looking at a billion dead, right? So you kind of have to go, okay, to what extent are we willing to buy an insurance policy for these things? Because a lot of the time in other situations, you'd go, you know, that's such a low chance of happening that it wouldn't be worth putting resources into, or they would be better put elsewhere.
Right. Well, and that's something that both of you are bringing up, a concept that's one of my favorites, which is bounded rationality, which is like, we all think that we're rational and we're all trying to be rational and calculate these things, but humans are famously bad at it. And we tend to, in particular, overestimate low probability events and underestimate high probability, or the other way around, right? Like if something is a 99% chance of happening, we're like, it's definitely going to happen. If it's a 1% chance of happening, we're like, it's never going to happen. And that 1% stuff, whether it's COVID or climate change or getting shot up at your school or whatever, is something that's very, very difficult for us to get our heads around. And I imagine in the Holocaust, the exact same thing, right? Yeah. We saw that with the Trump election, right? I mean, apart from the New York Times and the other people who were ridiculous and said 100% chance of Clinton winning, a lot of people said 99, and we took that to mean 100, and it wasn't, right? And so low probability, that's why Nassim Taleb's book about the black swan is like, it was, you say now, Heaton, that it's like, oh, of course there are big black swan events. At the time of the recession, we forgot that. And he wrote this book that reminded us that existed. Or I'm not even sure he was like, I think it came out even before the recession, because we're just not capable of thinking of these like really low probability, really massive events.
I can find in my own analysis of things, I have really strong, what would you call it? Like normalcy bias continuation bias, where I'm like, yeah, maybe stuff will change like 5% per year in that category you're describing. So like my guess is, and this is a really, really big if, but in a situation like you're describing, Cap, where there's going to be a shift in Germany from the most civilized, sophisticated, well-educated country on the planet to genocidal maniacs in the span of 2 years, I'd be like, no.
Yeah, I mean, I think like, I would do the same. I'm the same way, because I'm always maybe, like, it's not going to be that bad.
People, then those sea changes happen. You're like, oh shit, no, things do turn on a dime occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's when the pandemic was first, like, and it was out, it was happening in China, you know, January, February, and there's murmurs of it. A few people that I was talking to who were kind of more in the public health space were like, our lives are really going to change. And I just thought, you're being so extreme. These doomsday preppers, you know, it's going to be mildly worse is how I thought of it. Right. And that's, and one of the reasons for the big lockdown is once we saw things turn, we said, oh Christ. And then we had to really, really overcompensate because we were afraid of those big long tail events.
And frankly, there's plenty of examples of you of it better be, like being correct. You know, like 9 out of 10 times you're right to be like, let's not panic. This won't be as bad as you think. But you're right, that one time.
Yeah.
So
That was I had an episode early on with I mean, like literally the week that COVID became a thing, I was like, this is gonna be nothing. And I was doing from media analysis of, look, I've worked in media. There's always everybody really wrong about that. And a lot of the time too, what we're predicting is not something that we're thinking about. So there's a lady, I forget her name, but she does
Heaton's powering down.
She does simulation, like really heavy simulation theory, or not theory, like test runs.
Yep.
Uh-oh. We're
are you getting stabbed? What's happening?
We're
still like prior to the pandemic, she did a pandemic run with multiple people.
Oh boy.
Heaton, are you there?
Where they would bring him in every week and go, oh, oil pipelines have shut down. How are you going to react? And is the audio? Oh no, it's cutting in and out.
We have no idea what you're talking about.
You know what? I'm just gonna. Yep. Sorry.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry, gang. If it went that well.
Oh, he's on mute. We never got Heaton's take on the my story, I believe.
Yeah, sorry, I realized that we totally invaded. Oh God, he's
no. That was a good conversation. I was hoping to get Heaton to wrap him back around, but we've seen.
Yeah, Heaton. Let's...
Heaton. But
is am I at all audible or is it completely out?
Now you're
good. You're back.
You can hear me. Okay, maybe that cell phone booster does work. Yeah, in answer to your question, Cap, I kind of had to deal with this myself at one point. Oh, you can't hear me anymore?
No, we hear you. We hear you.
We can.
You can.
You just roll.
Okay. So I was up for a journalism fellowship that was funded by the Charles Koch Institute. Mm. And I was very wary of taking that. I wasn't worried about subverting my own ethics in order to get the money or anything like that. That was not of concern to me. But I was worried that it might be radioactive because the word Koch Brothers is in it. And I decided to take that money because that exact same week, there was a story about Hillary Clinton taking a ton of money from the Saudis. And I was like, well, if Hillary Clinton's going to take money from the Saudis, I think I can take money from the Koch brothers. And as per usual, one of those things, my main thing is just universally apply whatever you're talking about. Mm. If you're going to say like the Koch brothers are fundamentally evil and no organization should ever take their money, okay, definitely don't take any money from Saudi Arabia or China then, because right. I think they're demonstrably worse. I am inclined to say that that if you think that the thing that you're using the money is going to be better used than whatever else they might spend it on, then you should go ahead and take it. But just make sure that you are not going to change your opinion or change how you would be interacting with them on it, and retain your own integrity and position.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It's one thing if you honor that, you know, but I've been in a lot of hospitals. I've had a heart attack. I've had a lot of procedures, and I've had children too. So you're in the hospital a lot, and every time you look at the wing, it's named after somebody. Koch brother, and a lot of these people may be. I haven't Googled them all, but a lot of them, as Turner said before he left us, like he raised a good point. A lot of them probably feel guilty about something. They have some money.
Right.
A great way to feel better is to build a wing in a children's hospital. You know.
Right. I want Cap. If you're ever the next time you're in a hospital, which I hope is not. Anytime really, but if you are years. And they're wheeling you down some wing, I want you Googling the name of the wing and be like, back me out of this one, man. Yeah. This is,
I won't even name the name, but there was literally an article in the New York Times this week about a very prominent doctor who, has been accused of like sexual abuse and all this stuff. And he's someone I know through my old job and has been honored. I've been to events where this guy's been honored. My point is he's an old man now, you can Google this and figure out what I'm talking about. But
right,
people can go. You don't know who these people. You never know how bad people are. In other words, they're giving you money. I think as long as it's not taking money from like an actual, you know, Hitler or some at the moment, or or Putin, Roman Abramovich now. But like, if you took money from him in the past, it's for a good cause. It's for a non-political, especially if it's a non-political thing, like a hospital.
Can I give you a great example of Hitler funding a charity?
Yes.
I'm not saying it was good. I just, this is such an interesting historical quirk. When Nazis were taken as POWs to the United States, they were kind of distributed out through middle America. And initially what tended to happen was they would be paraded into town and the townspeople are all coming out to, you know, pelt them with tomatoes and like shout, yay, we beat you. And then they'd walk down the street and they were like 17-year-old kids. Cause this is towards the end of the war. And like, of course they should have been conscientious objectors, all these, I'm not trying to defend them, but they kind of like, after a while were like, well, like, I mean, we don't want to like torture them and shit. So we'll let them form a band. So they would let like these Nazi POWs form bands and things. And then the town would come out and listen to them play because it's, everybody's bored, right? So at one point, this one POW camp, the Nazis went, we would really like to do an art show. And the town went, we're not going to, like, you can do an art show, but we're not going to give you supplies because we're in the middle of a war. Like, we can't, we're not going to divert resources to you. And they were like, well, if we could get Hitler to pay for it, can we do an art show then? And they were like, yeah. And so they literally like wrote a letter to the Führer, who like took money out of the Nazi art fund or something and sent it to this POW camp in America. And they had an art show. And I was like, that's the weirdest fucking thing in American history.
He's an artist at, to this core. He always was a tortured artist.
That's right. Once an artist,
that was his weak
artist.
Spot. You know, we should have to assassinate him earlier. We should have sent in, said like, you want, we're going to honor your art. You know, we're going to have a whole thing, a whole night. Yeah. Like you just, and then, you know, when he gets to the, when he starts giving his thank you note, his thank you speech for, for that donation, we just
like, rather than invade, you know, a whole bunch of countries, why don't you just come to this exhibit with your watercolors?
Come to your exhibit. Yes. To support. That's an amazing blowhard story. Heat. I'm going to steal that one. I don't know where you learned
Go for it.
It's true, is Putin into the arts? Are we missing a huge opportunity here?
I think he's very much a martial arts guy.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
We might be able to get him, like, if we're like, hey, we'll like Joe Rogan and Jackie Chan will like celebrate your birthday with you if you get the fuck out of Ukraine.
Yeah.
No, if Hitler wasn't, instead of killing Hitler's baby, if you have a time machine, just go back and make him a successful artist. And he would have, his whole life was different.
And this is really a lesser part of the tragedy, but imagine the great art we might have. You know, I feel like his skills would have improved.
Yeah, he would have gotten better.
He was just too divided. He couldn't focus.
You know. So anyway, well, should we end on that note?
Yeah, Hitler's, I think we better end on that note. Hitler needs to pick a lane. Is a different lane.
Yeah,
is the note. Heaton, are you going to survive? Do we need to send a helicopter? What's going on?
Just so you understand really how remote I am. I do apologize. People listening can't tell how long we delayed this because of me, but we delayed it by about half an hour and I was real pissy because the technology wasn't working as well as I thought it was. So thank you for your patience, and I'll text Turner as well. But no, I think I'll be fine. I've got a dog and a machete. that should be enough, right? Like, I feel like I am last night, actually. Some 20 somethings were putting a tent up in front of the ramp where I was going to leave today. So I went over to go talk to them and just be like, hey, like, tomorrow you're going to need to move this tent. One of them recognized me and I ended up having dinner with them.
What?
I know, it was real flattering because usually it's once a year at Home Depot. That's usually where I get recognized. And then they were going to bring somebody else out. And I was like, oh, I am now the old bearded guy with a machete that scares campers. That is my role. I have become that man. So I'm fine. You don't need to worry about me.
Congratulations. You're running the wilderness out
that
there.
That's the mark of a true celebrity when you're in the woods and you can in Colorado. But the way the stock market's going, we're all going to be living in the woods with eating our peas and Alfredo sauce soon enough. The whole economy's about to collapse, I think, is what they're telling us. So
why do you think I'm hoarding all these knives?
Exactly. You're ready. Machetes and peas and Alfredo sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, stay alive. You too, Cap. It's wild and
how do we end this?
Well,
do we have a tagline? I forget. How do we end these shows? We just say
stay
goodbye.
Smart.
Stay smart, everybody. Yeah.
Stay worldly.
You're welcome for regaling you with all our brilliance. That's our tagline.
Get blowed, Hardy.
Yeah. All right. Bye, everyone. Later.
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.